The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Great to be with you. So much to cover, so much happening, so interesting this time we're in. And I'm really frustrated. And I don't know if you are also. My frustration is, maybe some of you are, but I'm frustrated in a very particular way. And the particular way is this. I'm a lawyer. I went to law school. I took the bar exam. I took this oath that you have to take as a lawyer. I believe in a system, a very American system. I'm for the American system, the legal system that works so well. And it's being torn to shreds in front of our very eyes, and it's infuriating to me. You know, there's people in my family that I've got Marines and cops, firefighters. I thought maybe I'd go in the military. I didn't end up going in the military, but I thought for a minute I'd be a priest. And I thought, well, you know, what am I called to do? Not what am I going to do? What am I called to do? What is it that I'm called to do that could make a difference? And my father became a lawyer, and I decided that was the right thing to do. I actually thought about being a professor, and I thought those people, it's a terrible place. Too many of the academia is just a mess. So I really felt like it was the right thing to do, the honorable thing to do, to be an American lawyer. And I thought and still think our American legal system is better than everywhere else in the world. And, you know, I had to pre-record an interview with a gentleman who we're going to hear from. He wrote a book. The book is called Winning America's Second Civil War, Jeffrey Paul. So I already had this great conversation with him. And he basically says the whole of what's happening right now is a war, a battle between two ideas. One is our founding and the other is progressivism. Our founding said God gave us all rights, all of us. We all have them against each other. The government doesn't get to take them from us except with our consent. In the system, the American system, the founding, and progressives say none of that matters, that people with power are going to decide how things go. It's a much, much longer argument that he makes, but that's basically it. Well, at the heart of all that is the American legal system, which was founded, the America was founded on that legal system, not adding it on later, not saying, let's pick that one, let's do it. No, the whole thing was, from the very beginning, was a system that had certain characteristics, rights that came from God, not man, rights that were mine and yours, not someone else's communally. It had a sense from the very beginning of standing up to bullies. America was a bully fighter. We had been bullied by England. We had seen bullying of our faith communities, you know, people when they were living in Europe and especially in England. and we were not going to allow bullies. So our system, our legal system, protected us from bullies, called due process, by the way. And so all the way down to today, the progressives, they try to take away due process by, instead of due process was always about the system working. You had a fair trial. You had a tribunal that was impartial. You had access to your the crimes charged against you so you could defend yourself. Access over time to a lawyer, but certainly access to speak back and to not be confronted in silence, not to be forced into silence. Due process was all about a fair system so that you could stand up to the bullies. And the progressives has basically said, we're going to be the bullies and we're going to be the ones in charge. And you don't have you. We're going to take away from you the ability to stand up for yourself in the system. And to be clear, they've done it systematically. One of the great shifts in the last 50, 75 years was to talk about, instead of due process, which had a tradition all the way back to the 1200s, back to the Magna Carta, back to the very beginning of English law, all the way back almost 1,000 years when it started. And at the center of it was standing up to bullies. And a system of standing up to bullies, having the right to do certain things to stand up to bullies, especially the government. And what the progressives have done is said, oh, yeah, well, it comes to due process. Let's create this thing called substantive due process, which is when we say that due process isn't just the system of fairness. It's also things we want, like due process. Substantive due process means we'll make up a right to privacy, which is includes abortion. And they've actually tried to gut due process. But let me leave that aside. We have this system and it's under assault. Well, maybe, just maybe. Due process broke out in the last few days up in New York City. Now, because we're like a punch drunk fighter and we're desperately trying to get to the bell to try to get out from getting beat on by these bullies, when you hear that Donald Trump had his massive, ridiculous, baseless fine in New York court reduced from $450+ million down to $175 million, you say, oh, thank goodness. Well, that's a break. That's really due process. Well, it sort of is. The appeals court actually worked. You got away from the lunatics in the trial court, Judge Endergon or whatever his name is. And you got yourself up and Letitia James. You got away from the crazies up to the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals said, wait a second, that system's not supposed to work like that. And they reduced it. Now, they should have thrown it out. And actually, there will be an opportunity. If you thought that was the end of that, it wasn't. Because what it meant was they reduced the amount that you had to post in terms of the fine so that you could appeal and get up to the Court of Appeals and say, this is crazy. So maybe, just maybe, due process is breaking out. But I have to tell you, when you see the systematic targeting of the American people that's going on, it's disheartening, to say the least. It's a threat to our future, to say the least. It's a threat to America's future. It's also a threat to individuals and all of us, because they're not stopping. They're putting people like Peter Navarro in jail. And when you see that Liz Cheney, not only did she lie, mislead, she spent $1 million a month for 18+ months persuading the jury pool and the judges and everyone else that this is what you have to do. And you better do it or you're going to pay a price. And if you're the former Secretary of Defense, Miller, you're going to be told by Liz Cheney and her acolytes, you better not keep talking out about this, talking about the fact that Trump asked for a National Guard. You're going to get, or you're going to be, life's going to be miserable for you. Intimidation, all in the name of lies. And again, our legal system is supposed to confront the bullies and flesh out their lies. And when it's not able to do that, we got big, big worries. Which is what brings me to, you know, Mike Benz, a national treasure at this point, you have to say. Mike Benz is amazing on social media. He's got these short videos that he does, and they're really extraordinary to watch. They're usually between 5 and 10 minutes, sometimes longer. He does some things with his followers or subscribers, I guess, that are longer. But in general, it's at Mike Benz Cyber, at Mike Benz Cyber on social media. But Benz says we didn't have the people that were in control of this country from 2017 to 2022 were the censorship gurus in government. And I think that's right. And remember what I've said to you. The biggest force right now tearing the country apart is what I call the narrative machine. And the narrative machine was big government working with big tech and big media, and in some case with big business, the bigs. Andrew Breitbart was right on this, and controlling what we know, and therefore what we know, it controls what we hear, therefore what we know, and controls what we do. That's what's happening around us. And Mike Benz's point is, it's at the heart of it, it was the big government piece, the censorship in industry in the government that was influencing everything else and managing things, whether it's the intelligence community or not, whether you call that the deep state or not. The reality is, I agree with him. And he says only in 2022, when we got the Twitter files and you got a change in direction, both at X, as well as a few months later in January of 2023 with the House and starting to see some oversight from the Republican House and the lawsuits out of Missouri, to give them credit, Eric Schmidt and the attorney general did that. That's when Mike Benz said that the dynamic changed. But I got to tell you, it's unbelievable. And, you know, when I the Pro America Report, I talk all the time with sources. I got a call from someone in the center of America about the censorship complex and the beatdown and the threats from government working with censorship outlets. And it's a big threat. It's not diminishing. They're not on their heels. It may look like we've understood them now. Well, now we know what's happening. Mike Benz, big thanks, others. But now we know what they're doing. It doesn't mean we're stopping them yet at all. There's a lot more to do. A lot more to do. All right, we've got to take a break. We've got to be right back. The Pro America Report. Visit ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com. Make sure you're signed up there, and you will get our emails and everything else. We'll take a break and be right back. Ed Martin, Pro America Report, back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Our next guest is Dr. Jeffrey E. Paul. He's a professor of social philosophy in the Social Philosophy and Policy Center at West Virginia University. It's in the John Chambers College of Business. He has been a research professor in Arizona. He's been all over the place teaching and writing. And his book, which is out, and I have a copy of, and thankfully, Dr. Paul, I got a copy, hardback copy, which I like very much, makes me even happier to read it, as well as an e-copy. And I read it. The book is called Winning America's Second Civil War, Progressivism's Authoritarian Threat, Where It Came From and How to Defeat It. So welcome, Dr. Paul. How are you, sir?
Very good.
I think this is a very helpful book because it explains how we ended up with this craziness at the universities, especially the universities, and it walks through that. Give us a summary of that. It's over 100 years old, this onslaught of America, and we're seeing the sort of bitter fruit today. But walk us through that. I think it really helps people understand.
Yeah, the country was founded on singular principles. That by singular, I mean that there was no predecessor like it,
right,
in the history of the world, and has been no successor since. It was founded on the view that individuals have a right to themselves. They have a right of self-ownership, sometimes referred to as the right to life. But what that meant was self-ownership. And prior to that, in all societies, they were ultimately owned by the ruler, the sovereign, the emperor, the pharaoh, etc. So this was unprecedented, what was being claimed in the United States as the founding principle. So Everyone was entitled to themselves and entitled to their liberty and therefore entitled to the fruits of their labor. That was what the country was founded on. It was viewed that individuals could coalesce and form a government for the protection of those rights, or the individual could choose not to and defend them on their own. It's more efficient to do it with a government. So that's what the founders did. They established a new government in the United States. And that view was the general view in the United States when it was founded. It was the authoritative view in the United States. And it was the prevailing view through the Civil War. And of course, that view led to the Civil War because the country had been founded with slavery, which was a complete flouting of the founding principle of self-ownership. After the Civil War was completed and these rights were entirely secure for the entire population, within about 10 years, the view of the founders was completely rejected in one but significant sector of the country's institutions, and that was its colleges and universities. It happened abruptly and accidentally, and that's the shocking fact. What happened was American colleges and universities were not research institutions. They were just teaching institutions, pedagogical institutions, but no research was being done there and so forth. And therefore, no doctorates were being awarded. There were a few exceptions to that, but they were rare. So the American academics, the presidents of these institutions, felt that they had to be upgraded. And they had to be upgraded in emulation of the only country that had had doctoral programs for 200 years, and that was Germany. And so they decided to import Americans who had received German doctorates into their institutions and start graduate programs at each of their institutions. They did that. Effectively, that gave these Americans trained in Germany a monopoly over higher education. The monopoly was fine in the natural sciences and engineering and so forth and medicine, the empirical sciences.
Right.
But in the social sciences and the humanities, it was a disaster because the Germans had exactly the antithesis in their views about society and what was the correct set of political principles. They were the antithesis of the American founding principles. And they basically, to try to simplify it as much as possible, the Germans regarded nations as one would think of organisms. They thought of them as organisms in which individual human beings, were merely the cellular units, and right, therefore obligated to keep the organism alive. And to do so, they were to follow the dictates of the brain, and the brain was comprised of the faculty of these universities. So basically, individuals had no rights, only duties to obey. And most of the German professoriate were socialists. They called themselves state socialists. They used the German term for that. When their students got to the United States, returned to the United States, they couldn't describe themselves as socialists, which was an odious term in the United States. So they had to disguise what they were by adopting another term of description. The term they adopted was progressive. Hmm. And they got that term, they borrowed it from one of the German political parties, the German Progress Party. So they called themselves progressives and disguised themselves by using that term and also by giving a description of their position which avoided the differences between it, publicly gave a description of their positions, which avoided the antithesis between their position and the founding position. They discussed that with among themselves in their journals and so forth, but not publicly. Mm. And because a lot of Americans began to study it at universities and colleges, which they hadn't done up until the last quarter of the 19th century and into the 20th, that ideology, the ideology of progressivism, spread and infected both parties initially, but became the acquired complete control of one of the parties in the New Deal, and that was the Democratic Party. And that control that it had over the Democratic Party spread from the presidency down to the membership. And so it now dominates one party. Some who are aligned with the original.
We were talking with Dr. Jeffrey E. Paul, a professor at West Virginia University, and Counter Books, by the way, is the publisher of this book, Winning America's Second Civil War. I think it's helpful to follow that path. But what your central thesis is, well, the Second Civil War is a war of ideas. That book you say, your book is about ideas. And the idea is the founding, you know, the founding setup versus this progressive setup. And those two are they irreconcilable? In other words, is it a war where somebody's got to win? They cannot exist in, you know, in tandem, because they ultimately, the progressive leads to the destruction of the other, if you look at it backwards now, is that a weakness of the founding vision? Was it allowed sort of freedom and institutions to develop that basically are undermining its very sort of central thesis?
Let me take your first question. They are irreconcilable.
Okay.
And and in fact, I would describe contemporary America coming up to this election.
Dr. Paul, let me do something. I'm going to take a brief break real quick and we'll come back and keep going, because I want to keep going. So just hold on. We're talking again with Dr. Jeffrey Paul. His book is Winning America's Second Civil War. Don't forget where we are, Dr. Paul, because this is an important point. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We'll be back in just one moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dr. Paul, but I knew we'd get a hard break and I'd get trouble from my folks. So the book is Winning America's Second Civil War by Dr. Jeffrey Paul. Back to what you were saying, if you can. I'm sorry to have interrupted you, that they are irreconcilable is the point. And go ahead. Let me make sure you finish before I follow up.
Yeah, they're irreconcilable. You can't have the rights that founders believe that all human beings have, when the other side believes there are no rights, but only a duty to obey. There's no way of reconciling the two. And the history of Germany in the early 1930s and then into the late 1930s is an illustration of what can happen when basically such a view becomes the dominant view in a society. So I think we're in a very perilous position today, far more perilous than we have been at any time in our history. That's my view. And the peril has been increasing ever since the last quarter of the 19th century. And nobody knew or understood what had transpired in the universities, except for one man. There was a man named Herbert Tuttle, who was the most eminent historian of Germany in the United States. And he warned in 1883 in the Atlantic Monthly exactly what would happen. It was an exact forecast of what was going to happen to the universities and the country if it kept importing these Americans trained in Germany. So that's what I would have to say about that.
Dr. Jeffrey Paul is our guest. The book is Winning America's Second Civil War. All right. So what do you do about it? You know, I mean, to me, the most glaring exposure of the problem in the last couple of years has been the universities, and that's probably, there's probably other ones, but it seems to me that people can kind of get that. But on one hand, it looks like this, they're teaching a system that's incompatible with America's continuing, you know, success. On the other hand, they are what they are. They're the universities where everybody goes and everybody is, you know, indoctrinated. What do you do?
Well, there's the question of what you do about the universities, but then there's a larger question, since it would, any kind of attempt at reform, if it was successful, it would take several generations to be successful. There's an immediate peril, and I could talk about the universities, but let me just talk about
go broadly, yep.
Peril and how I would address it. My view is that the Republican Party, which is the non-autocratic party, whatever its flaws, it's not dominated by this point of view. The other party is hopeless and can't really be reformed this time. So the Republican Party has to get a majority of the voters, and it won't just get it by the kind of contest that we see transpiring now. It probably will get a majority. Trump probably will win, but we don't know that to be the case. So the Republicans need an issue which will automatically gain the allegiance of a majority of voters. What would that be? And I put it at the end of my book. It's why I proposed it. I worked with three economists, and what we found, if we supplanted the current tax system, the whole of it, the whole thing, the income tax, the personal income tax, the corporate income tax, the payroll tax on both sides, the capital gains tax, the estate tax, the gift tax, and replace it with a 1% universal sales tax. That means all expenditures, not just retail sales, but all expenditures of any kind, like all the ones that are made in financial markets, stocks, bonds, derivatives, and so on. If you taxed all of that at 1%, you would get more revenue than is current being raised by the current system. And at the same time, individuals all the way down to the least wealthy of individuals would have retained income that is far higher than the income that they have after taxes today. And it would be enormously popular. Therefore, in the middle class, the majority of people who vote in this country, than the current system. And if the Republicans took it up, they would get a majority and explained its effects, explained how it would benefit every individual who is now being burdened with a federal income tax. And so that's what I propose immediately. Now, I do propose other reforms of the universities and the Supreme Court and other institutions. But I realize that those are not going to be transformed overnight. And I also should mention that what the universities have done is they've corrupted the rest of society. That's why the media, 95% of the media is just like 95% of the academy. It's dominated by people from this one sector of the political spectrum that made its way into the country in the late 19th century. That's why you don't get a diversity of opinions on television or the newspapers and so on. You have to go on the internet to get a diversity of views about current news. So that's what I propose. There are things that can be done with public universities, and I think the federal government should not be giving any university, public or private, any support whatever. And it's spending a huge billions and billions of dollars on the universities today. That all of that should be cut off at the federal level. And at the state level, they have to require diversity within these institutions. Florida's done some of this. Ohio's done some of it. But it's going to take a long time. That's not going to be an overnight process. That's why I propose the tax that I propose, the universal sales tax, because it's something that can translate into immediate effects that would revive the original view and the original institutions that come from the founding.
Again, our guest is Dr. Jeffrey Paul. His book is Winning America's Second Civil War. We just got a couple minutes left. In the arc of history now, you studied this and you wrote about it. Are you optimistic? I know one of the chapters, I forget which one now, you talk about counter-revolution, I think maybe a second or third chapter. And then just in your answer just now, you said it's not going to happen overnight. Are you optimistic that you can turn back this? That, you know, again, if it's competing systems, one our founding, which was so unique and singular, as you put it, the other now this progressive one that we can at least see in other parts of the world doing its damage. Are you optimistic that we can win this?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I think what the Trump candidacy represents is a candidacy that's, if successful, will stop many of the, well, let's say, change the trajectory of the way that the country is, the path that the country is following temporarily. But that's a temporary thing. And I think in order to have the Republican Party acquire, nothing's permanent, but a fairly long-term, immediate-term majority, my tax proposal is the only thing that I could think of while the rest of the institutions are being reformed. And that's because that's going to take a long time to reverse what's transpired in the media, which is just simply a mirror of the university, is going to take a very long time. Our corporations are being corrupted as well, because all the people who run them have university degrees. So there's a view that it makes no sense that there's DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion in the private sector, but there is today. It's not just in universities. It's in publicly traded companies. And so that will show you the degree of corruption that has transpired. And everything that the current administration has done is, when you think about it, it's appalling. It's actually appalling. You know, they've financed both sides of the Israeli war. They've allowed Iran to acquire huge sums of money, which it gives to its surrogates.
Right.
And it's kept this open border, and it's done it deliberately. So,
yeah, it is. It's extraordinary. Unfortunately, well, thank you, first of all, for the long conversation. I kept you longer than I had originally agreed. Dr. Jeffrey Paul, his book is Winning America's Second Civil War. Everywhere you get books, you can get it. I'm looking at it on Amazon, just out a few weeks ago. Very interesting topic, as well as take on things. So we will watch closely and have you back again. And thank you very much. We're up against the break, though. I've got to run. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily look at the significant issues of our time from an experienced conservative perspective. Sponsored by Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, this broadcast continues the legacy of Phyllis Schlafly and stands against forces that mock traditional values, slander America, and redefine the family. Now, here's the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
Love your neighbor as yourself is one of Christ's greatest commandments, as he said in Matthew 22, verse 39. This is an incredibly important commandment, that we should love and look after those around us and care for those in need. We should treat others as we would like to be treated. However, there are those in the more liberal sects of Christianity who hope to twist the meaning of this passage. Liberal Christians and non-Christian liberals alike point to this passage to tell Christian conservatives that they should support open borders. This is a misinterpretation. St. Basil the Great wrote on how we are to take care of the least among us. Charles Haywood updated his idea for modern times, contextualizing how to love the least among us in our current political and economic landscape. Discussing charity, Haywood says, "We often owe specific duties to those immediately around us that we do not owe to everyone else. This implies that charity should not generally be directed outside the country, or even usually outside our own towns and cities. Loving your neighbor means loving those close to you first, not jumping straight to migrants coming from across the world. Loving your neighbor actually may mean standing up against migration, because a large influx of migrants may negatively affect your neighbors here at home. Charity, Haywood continues, implies we should work vigorously against our society's admitting migrants who depress wages of the working class, thereby increasing poverty of those already in our community. Many migrants work for cheaper wages, which takes jobs away from Americans here at home. Christian liberals, who are advocating too often for illegal immigration, not just migration, are misleading their neighbors about what our call is when we love our neighbor. Do not fall for the lies of the left, for they seek to pervert and change Christ's instructions to fit their own destructive political agendas.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. It's no secret that globalists are bent on destroying Western culture. Whether the threat comes from inside or outside our borders, America must be protected from cultural Marxism and those who would deny American sovereignty. We're seeking your insight at PhyllisSchlafly.com. That's PhyllisSchlafly.com. And join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Hey, wrapping things up. This is a what you need to do, a window today, what you need to do, because this is an important topic. And I don't really have as good an action item for this as I like. Sometimes you say, you know, call so-and-so, show up at such-and-such, you know, read this, you know, do that, vote this way. Sometimes it's more specific. This is a broader slightly, but I have to tell you, the persecution of Jeff Clark is such a black eye on this country. Jeff Clark has a bar complaint against him from the DC, the District of Columbia Bar Association. And they have an unwritten rule, the DC bar, because you can imagine the DC bar, there's a lot of lawyers that work in the government that the DC bar, you know, it would have the jurisdiction over in some sense. Many of them would be practicing law and be DC bar members. Then they become attorney general or associate attorney general, or they become the general counsel to the Department of Homeland Security, whatever it is. And if it were possible for any single person to file a complaint against a DC bar, you know, a lawyer in the DC bar, you'd have complaints all the time, right? If you're a Democrat and you hate the Republican administration, you'd file a bar complaint, all that. So the DC bar has had a rule, an unwritten rule. I don't think it's written, but it's difficult to imagine how you'd make it codify it formally. But the unwritten rule was basically, if you don't have personal knowledge, firsthand knowledge of conduct, you can't file a bar complaint about it, right? So you can't be, you know, living in Missouri and you say, the attorney general just did something I don't like, I'm going to file a bar complaint against him and file it. Because generally when you file a bar complaint, you're allowed to file it without any, There's no cost. There's no penalty if it's deemed that it was not valid. So it's wide open for the citizens to say, hey, I live in Missouri, I'm in St. Louis, and I see this lawyer, he acted badly, I file a bar complaint against him, I want people to know. The bar would look into it, the Missouri bar. DC said, look, we're not going to have it so that every time somebody hates what the attorney general does or the general counsel somewhere, that there's bar complaints. So you have to have personal, firsthand knowledge of the conduct. Well, in the case of Jeff Clark, the complaints against him were that he was advising his client, the president of the United States, about what possible legal options he had, which is what lawyers do. In fact, lawyers come up with as many different scenarios as they can possibly imagine as a way to manage or understand risk. So when you're sitting with a client, you say, well, it could go like this, it could go like that, there could be these facts, there could be this, that, they could use this law, they could try that law, you could have this judge. You have to take a whole bunch of factors in place. You have to take them into account to manage risk and make decisions about it. So Jeff Clark, by the nature of his job, very senior in the Department of Justice, a guy who had served in the highest levels of the Bush administration, W. Bush, and had been practicing law, Harvard graduate. He'd been practicing law, well respected. He's now advising President Trump, who's trying to figure out what happened with this election, where tens of millions of Americans felt like and still feel it didn't go the way it seemed to be headed. There were things that happened that did not seem to be normal in the way elections work. Stopping in the middle of the night and all these things. And so as a good lawyer, you're giving all the different options. And some of the options were you could stop things this way. You could go forward that way. You could just take it the way it's going. All the different options. A good advocare, the root, Latin root, give voice, to give voice to. A good advocate is going to give voice to all the different theories, all the ideas, all the things that were going on. And suddenly, because there was this massive effort to make it so no one would ever question the election of 2020, you should be afraid. You'll be sued by Dominion or others if you're saying the wrong things. And you'll settle if you're Fox News because you're worried about it. And if you're a lawyer, you got left-wingers, Democrats, not even left-wingers, Democrats, who say we can't upset the status quo, which is that we're not going to allow questioning. We're not going to have auditable elections. So go after all these different lawyers, whether it's Dean Eastman, or Jeff Clark, or Rudy Giuliani, or Sidney Powell, or any of them. They had a project called the Project 65. And here's the point. Jeff Clark has had an illustrious career, and the D.C. bar next week will start a bar trial against him for being a good lawyer and a smart lawyer and a lawyer who cares and a lawyer who represents his client, a lawyer who is an advocate. And the two things that I deeply, deeply regret is that the D.C. bar is doing this at all, but also that there's not more lawyers saying out loud, this isn't right. This shouldn't happen. You could disagree vehemently. You could even tell all your friends, you could never hire Jeff Clark. He recommended this. That's not a theory. But you cannot use the bar and the license as lawfare against individuals doing their jobs, doing what they're hired to do. There's no allegation of criminal conduct. The D.C. bar is not talking about criminal conduct. They're not allowed to. And the most despicable part about it, by the way, is in this case, the D.C. bar could not have a first person account because the people in the room were Donald Trump and Jeff Clark, maybe a few others. And instead, they accepted a letter from Senator Dick Durbin, Illinois Democrat, partisan, saying, oh, yeah, we got a problem. You got to look at this. And they used that as a complaint. And they broke their norms that said, we're not going to do these, you know, third party. I think something was really rotten. Please do something about it. They said, oh, in this case, Senator Durbin's got a senior position in the Senate Judiciary Committee. We're going to let him make this objection. And we're going to use it as a basis to punish Jeff Clark. So the to do is pray for Jeff Clark. He's a faithful guy. Find a way to track this story. I don't think Jeff has put out much request for a legal defense fund, but if he does, we'll make sure to put that out there because it's costing him a lot of money. And demand that people do the right thing and stop this madness. Anyway, that's all I've got. Jeff Clark, what a good guy. We got to go. Thank you, Ryan Haidt. I'm Mason Mohan. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Talk to you then.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.